7:15 on this Thursday morning, 10-24-24. More of the same weather-wise, bone dry, really. And we're just talking to Mike Strain. You got to be careful if you're going to have a fire. A lot of the areas under a burn ban. And we don't want one of them underground fires again like we had last year. Remember that with all that mess? No, don't want any of that at all. So be very careful if you're burning anything and check with your parish to see if a burn ban is in effect and what you can and cannot do, and never leave a fire unattended. Martha Cagle joins us now, Executive Director of Unity of Greater New Orleans. Talk about the fight against homelessness and what's going on there with the, or what went on, I guess, yesterday underneath the Calliope over... I guess the Pontchartrain Expressway on Calliope Street. How you doing, Martha?
I'm doing fine, but it was a very hard day yesterday for unhoused people who were unexpectedly rousted by state police from the places that they've called home on the street and abruptly moved, even though there's an active effort in coordination with the city and the nonprofits to and the state to permanently house them, and they were in process of that, and that work was disrupted. And it wasn't just limited to the Calliope corridor. Actually, it started early in the morning, and it included the French Quarter, Canal Street, Claiborne Avenue, around the Superdome. There were many, many people who were moved. I don't think the state police wanted to be doing this, but they were ordered to do so. And people had been told that they might be moved on Thursday, but instead, abruptly, it happened on Wednesday. And we heard numerous reports of people losing their medicine, losing their IDs, other important paperwork, losing their clothing, people who were mentally ill being very frightened and upset, and people being scattered into other neighborhoods. So nothing positive was accomplished.
So I'm trying to get a handle on what exactly happened, Martha. And I saw Leslie Harris on TV, and we spoke to her yesterday. So they basically just moved people down two blocks or something?
Yes, I mean, I do think that the state police tried to minimize the damage. I don't think they wanted to be doing it at all. So, to their credit, I think they tried to minimize the disruption by trying to move people, you know, a distance away from where they had been. And assisting them even with moving their possessions, but because there was no notice, there were a lot of people's possession. You know, a lot of people just weren't there at the time and didn't know it was going to happen, and so their medicines and IDs and clothing were thrown away, and in many cases, so there was an attempt to minimize the disruption, which I do really appreciate. And I know the outreach workers across the city tried to comfort and calm people down. But, you know, unfortunately, many of the people who live outside, most of the people who live outside, we have found are very disabled. And many of them have very severe mental illness and are paranoid. And you might only get one chance to win their trust. And, you know, this really disrupted their trust. And when you move people without housing them, even if you try to move them to a specific place, you're going to end up scattering a lot of them who are either frightened or don't want to be in a very densely populated spot. When they move people, they kind of densely pack them into a new spot. And whenever we lose people that we have worked so hard to assess and get to mental health treatment and get, you know, most of our housing programs require documentation of disability. So you're wasting taxpayer money because we're using federal grants to fund this work. And our work has been wasted and taxpayer money has been wasted and nothing's been accomplished. And I'm sure today we're going to get numerous complaints from businesses and homeowners in other neighborhoods that suddenly homeless camps have popped up and homeless people have popped up who weren't there before but have now been moved into those spots. So
we need to take a break.
Housing is the solution. This is not the solution.
We need to take a break for traffic, Margaret. Martha, and I got a text here, two texts from the same number. I want you to address these because this goes
okay.
to somebody that I don't think has any idea what went on yesterday. Why
okay.
don't the NGOs who care so much provide a legal and safe location for these people What happened? The state enforced laws the city has failed to do for years. The delay in justice and enforcement is the root problem. Well, I don't think they really enforce the law. I think they just kind of move, push them down a block, a couple of blocks. And we can also talk, Martha Cagle, when we come back, about how that disrupted the plan to get these people, I hate to use that phrase, but to get the people that were on the street into permanent housing, because there were plans in place and vouchers, as I understand it, et cetera. We'll pick it up when we come back. There are no simple solutions to complex problems, y'all, but we'll try to sort through it with Martha Cagle, with the Executive Director of Unity of Greater New Orleans, when we come back. 721 Traffic Now, WWL. 5 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Martha Cagle, Director of Unity of Greater New Orleans, helping to house the homeless. And Martha, I read that text to you. Let me read one more and you can respond to this as well.
Sure.
Put them in an institution, get them off the street. These programs have failed. Sorry, but I agree with the governor on this. I would find an abandoned building and open a rehab. I guess you guys have never thought about anything like that, but go ahead and address all of that, if you would, please.
Well, you know, that just doesn't work. And what we're doing actually does work, but what people don't understand is that the cause of homelessness is that we have a tremendous amount of poverty, and the rents have risen so dramatically in the last couple of years. Fair market rent in 2023 was only $1,000 for a one-bedroom apartment. That was already way above the means of a lot of people, but in only 2 years, it's gone from $1,000 to $1,236. And there's a lot of people in our community making minimum wage of $7.25 an hour or slightly above. And most of the people on the street we found are actually quite disabled, both mentally and physically. So what we found is what actually works, and this has been studied around the country, is permanent supportive housing, is an apartment with a rent subsidy where the person is expected to use a third of their income for rent and the rest of it is subsidized, and a case manager, very importantly. You don't just give people a key to an apartment, but you have a case manager who actually visits them several times a week, sometimes every day, depending on how sick they are, and helps them get to substance use treatment, get to the psychiatrist, get to the doctor, because these people tend to be very, very physically ill as well as mentally ill, and help them stabilize themselves. If possible, help them find jobs, get disability benefits, get reconnected to the community, get reconnected to family, just stabilize them. And we have found that that really works well. But the problem is that there's a constant churn of people who were not homeless yesterday who show up on the street today because they cannot afford the rent. And until we address all that, because housing rent assistance is only provided to a fraction of the people who are actually eligible financially for it, you know, we are going to continue to have this problem. But fortunately, we have a lot to celebrate in our community because we have actually put together a lot of competitive grants, and the city has put some money up, the state has put money into it, and we're all working together. But I don't think that new governor realizes the extent to which we're working together and the extent to which these efforts work. And the state is actually, through the Housing Corporation, which is a state agency, is actively involved in assisting with this. So it's almost like the state is at cross purposes with itself. And I hope the public is sophisticated enough to understand that just moving people around without actually permanently housing them is a waste of taxpayer money and is undermining the work we do, because we lose people that we've been working closely with. A lot of the people in the camp we were taking to see apartments, we were actively working with most of the people that were moved from the Calliope corridor. And so it's just really disappointing to see our work undermined in this way.
So to be clear, and you can correct me, Martha, if I'm saying anything wrong, for people that are saying the state was enforcing the law that the city didn't, and my takeaway from this is when you said now you're going to get calls today from people in the neighborhoods where they were pushed, where the homeless people were pushed, all this did was push people two blocks down the street so they wouldn't be seen out of sight, out of mind for the Taylor Swift crowd. Is that in any way inaccurate, what I said?
No, that is exactly true. And the sad thing is I think Taylor Swift will be very upset.
She would be the last one that would want that, from what I understand.
Yeah, she's a humanitarian. She cares about poor people. I mean, she would not want this done in her name.
And as she
we may actually get very negative publicity. You know, we're seeing Louisianians are seen as caring people. And I think this looked like we don't care about some of the most vulnerable people in our population, when in fact we care very much, and the public has been supporting this work. And I would just encourage people to, you know, contribute to our warehouse, you know, go to your cupboard, give us dishes that you don't need, pots and pans, towels, bedding. We need all that because we're housing a massive number of people. In the last year alone, we've housed 1,155 people.
Martha, real quick, we're out of time. If somebody wants to help, how do they do it? Where do they go?
They can contact us at homelesswarehouse@unitygno.org or call 483-9300, 483-9300.
Thank you. Got to go. 7:31, time for WWL First News. 7:46 now, 14 till 8. Tommy Tucker, WWL. I see a tweet here from Bob Marshall about the Mid-Barrett area sediment diversion related to a story where the feds are saying, you know, you either got to get going on this Mid-Barrett area sediment diversion or somebody owes us $500 million and we want our money back. And he said, Bob Marshall says, wow, time for Governor Landry to choose between Oyster Buddies or the rest of coastal residents and businesses. With that, we welcome in our guest, Alicia Renfro, a senior manager of science and policy for the National Wildlife Federation's golf program. Alicia, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good.
I know you probably don't want to weigh into the politics of all of this, but tell me what the scientists are saying as it relates to the leading scientists, as it relates to Louisiana's coastal master plan, a portion of which is the Mid-Barrett area sediment diversion, accurate?
Yeah, so, you know, there was recently a letter where 40 scientists signed on in support of the Coastal Master Plan and using science to guide restoration in Louisiana. We, as scientists, think it's really important that we take the opportunity that we have with the funding that is available to actually use the science to build restoration projects that work together that benefit Louisiana over the long term. We can do a lot of restoration that's just kind of random acts of restoration and not have a lot to show for it 20, 30 years down the line. But the Coastal Master Plan provides an opportunity to come up with a suite of projects that can work together to benefit Louisiana in the long run.
So I live right down the street from somebody who I think is the president of the Oyster Harvesters. I forgot the name of the organization. His son, and look, I care about the people in Plaquemines Parish. I care about the oyster fishermen. I also care about the state in general. And what does the science say about the master plan, about the portions, these 40 scientists, I guess, what exactly have they signed on to, doctor? That's what I'm asking you.
Yeah, so, I mean, it is in support of the master plan process itself. And we all know that our coast has changed a lot over the last few years. Anybody who's been out in our coastal marshes on a consistent basis, scientists, oystermen, shrimpers, we see that change happening. And so what this is about is, like, how do we actually build a better future for Louisiana and try to actually still have all those things, have oysters, have shrimp, have all the fish that we want to pursue, but actually use the river that built all of South Louisiana, once again, mimic the natural processes to build and restore land. And I don't think we have to choose between those things. There's room for all of that, but it's going to change maybe where things are. We're going to maybe have to develop technologies to make it so that fishermen can be more flexible, whether that's, you know, on-boat refrigeration or helping upgrade boats. It can all happen, but we have to actually work together to make it happen.
One question I've had that I ask every time I talk to anybody about this, and doctor, I might have asked you this question before, but when we talk about oyster fishermen and the livelihood and dolphins and everything else, I don't know if it can be said this simply or not, but it seems as though if I'm going 10 miles down the road to harvest oysters, and before I had to go 50 miles down, or after the diversion, I'll have to go 50 miles down the road. Was I going 50 miles down the road? And this is just a gross generalization, obviously. But am I just going back to 50 miles down the road, which is where I had to go before the land loss, which is the diversion is designed to reestablish? So it's not as though really this is a great hardship. It's just it was made a lot more convenient for me, and we're just putting it back to like it was. Tell you what, I got to stop for traffic. You can answer when we come back, if you would, please, because I'm trying to get a handle on this. I really am. 750, 10 till 8, traffic now, WWL. 7:55, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Dr. Alicia Renfro, Senior Manager of Science and Policy for the National Wildlife Federation's Gulf Program. Group of 40 leading scientists released a letter supporting Louisiana's coastal master plan, part of which is the Mid-Barataria sediment diversion. Story in the NOLA.com today saying that, you know, the federal government saying either fish or cut bait, because if you don't get going with this project, somebody owes us $500 million that have already been spent on this. I was asking you before the break, Doctor, and again, I'm maybe somebody that texted in phrased it a little better than I did it. They say, sounds like man-made levees interrupted natural process, and this diversion is just trying to reestablish natural process. And my question was, okay, so if now oyster fishermen have to travel, and this is, again, a simplification, but 10 miles to get oysters, and after this is done, they're going to have to go 50 miles. Well, did they have to go 50 miles before the erosion happened, and they're just going back to where they had to go initially?
Yeah, in many cases, that's completely true. The system has changed over time, and people have started, you know, growing oysters far more inland than they did in the past.
So it's kind of like I gave you, and this is, again, going to be maybe a bad analogy, but you started leaving. You were supposed to work till 5 o'clock. Then you started leaving at 4. Then you started leaving at 3. Now you're leaving at noon. Guess what? We're going to make it where you got to work till 5 o'clock again, which was the original thing, and now everybody's complaining. Am I on to anything here or not?
Yeah, I think it's similar to that. I think people are really good at changing slowly with time, and that is what has continued to happen. And now this is the Mid-Barataria diversion will change salinities and will cause another change that may be a little bit more abrupt than what had happened in the past, but it's just moving those lines farther out towards the Gulf of Mexico. And people are really good at change, but also really hate change and will often fight it every step of the way.
So you're a scientist. You know nothing happens in a vacuum, right? How do you separate the politics from this? And if so many people are for this, who could be against it and why?
You know, I think that is the real power of the Coastal Master Plan, is trying to take the politics out of restoration, to actually look at what the science tells us about where we can locate projects, what kind of projects can work together overall to, you know, build a better future. There are a lot of people that are supportive of this. There are people that have concerns, and I think it is good to listen to those concerns. I think with something like the Mid-Barataria diversion, the concerns are built into the project to address impacts that may happen, adjustments that need to be made in terms of mitigation, stewardship for commercial fisheries, for things like dolphins. But there's that fear of change happening. People have gotten used to the unnatural system that we currently have. And so restoring those natural processes can seem scary.
So what happens if this, you got the financial considerations, federal government wants their $500 million back if this doesn't proceed. But, and again, that's probably a very gross oversimplification of what's going on here legally. But scientifically, what happens if the Mid-Barataria sediment diversion does not proceed?
We will have the Barataria Basin will continue to suffer from having a lack of consistent sediment input. We'll continue to lose land. That basin in particular, looking into the future, loses a lot of land. Even if we do things like marsh creation projects and ridge restoration, you're going to lose a whole lot of land in the Barataria Basin without Mid-Barataria.
Thank you. I appreciate the time. Dr. Alicia Renfro, Senior Manager of Science and Policy for the National Wildlife Federation's Golf Program. Somebody texted in and said, I'm torn. I grew up running the bayous and lakes south of Lafitte. Shrimping and crabbing is in my blood, but I know for a fact that the Barataria Basin looks nothing like it did 30 years ago. I'd have destroyed my old camp on Bayou Norman. What protections we had ain't there no more. This diversion has to happen, or we may not have a population to buy the oysters, crabs, or shrimp. We'll take a break. We come back. We're going to talk to Dr. B, Dr. Brent Wallace, Chief Medical Officer of People's Health. Talk about the importance of primary care providers when we come back on WWL.